Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Alan Buttle Radio Show. And today's a particularly special episode because I'm talking with my old friend Ray West, who is the owner of BigLies.org, and who I found out about through his appearance, for example, on the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. So welcome, Ray, and thank you for joining me.
Yeah, hi, thanks very much indeed. It's nice to hear from you. It's nice to be in contact with you. And let's try and get a good episode here. My first contact with you was online. It was about China, and I've incorporated your material on China into my website here and there. And the next thing I looked at was your Irish stuff, which I thought was very good. In fact, I tipped off Andrew Joyce of the Occidental Observer because I thought it was so good. I don't know, he's Irish, and he would be interested, presumably. And we can go on to talk about lockdown and so on. Let me just start, though, I'll just explain where I am coming from, where I am.
Please.
I've got a site, yes, big-lies.org. The most relevant things really are, there's a file there called Jews, which is a history of Jews. It's a whole lot of things which I've put together over a number of years, which starts with sort of prehistory and goes up to the present day. And that's the one that includes Alan Buttle's material on China, which I was quite impressed with. And the other thing which I should put emphasis on is a thing called articlesonjews.html, which has been my second most popular site. It's had 4,000 hours of viewing online. And my main one actually is my Nukes forum, which is my perennial, that's had vast numbers of hits. And I also upload things. For example, I've got a book called The Living Cell by Harold Hillman. It's a PDF file. It's had 4,000 downloads. I only thought of putting it up quite recently. And there's one by Bertrand Russell on war crimes in Vietnam, which I put up because nobody else had, including the copyright holders of Russell's stuff. And I used to have YouTubes, but YouTube cancelled my site. My YouTube on Himmler, which David Irving talking about Himmler, had 150,000 views. I've also got quite a popular thing called Lords of the Nukes, which gives the full reason. It's a 3.5-hour program giving all the stuff about nuclear weapons. Very important, in my view. Now, what we're going to talk about here was China. Now, you, Alan, your technique, as far as I can see, is to look intelligently at books and online sources, and that's quite an art in itself, isn't it? Because you've got to locate good stuff, and the blogosphere, the net, the whole internet sphere of talk is very heavily dominated by Jews, so it's quite a skill just navigating through it all.
I think personally it's a case of filtration, really, filtering the information into what is sort of relevant and irrelevant, because as you say, there's no shortage of information out there, and they actually do tell us everything that they're doing openly. It's just that you have to wade through so much disinformation to find the sort of little nuggets of information to allow you to piece everything together. That's at least that's how I see it.
Okay.
And I just, I recommend my audience to go to Ray's site and look at the information there. There's a huge array of information. So I recommend that to my audience.
Okay. Thanks. That's nice of you. I was going to say something. I've forgotten what it was now. We must get on to this lockdown business, but I think we share the view that it's basically the whole thing is a psyop, it's a phony.
Yeah.
The only interesting thing about it is trying to work out what's really going on.
Well, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I don't believe, and I mentioned, I had a quite long podcast with my friend Northern Tracy a couple of months ago, and talking about the virus theory and things like this, and I actually don't believe that there are viruses as such, as they are presented to us. And and yes, this sort of this coronavirus agenda has really been unprecedented in terms of its effect on civil rights, you know, to be denied the right to leave your own house and things like this. But of course, as the sort of fear of the so-called virus is starting to wane, and now we're on to the 8th of June now, just to put a date on where we are today, what we are now seeing is the politicization of this agenda, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know if you agree with me, Ray, but I think there are very, very serious steps being taken towards a war, a very major war with China. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's unlikely. I think if you look at world wars over, you know, since 1914, they were the trick in analysing these things is not to regard them as, you know, America versus Russia or something, but as the Jewish elite, if you can call them that, in all these countries, and the Jews can cooperate at a moment's notice. And I, in my view, which is on, it's part of my site, is called How the Chosen Race Won the Second World War, something like that.
Yeah,
and it's a long piece in which I've bunged together as many suggestive fragments as I can. It's not even complete. There are loose ends there. But the best writer on world wars known to me is Hexane. He's a French chap, probably pronounced Hexan, 527, that number being the significant day in Christianity. And Hexane has it on his site, which I had to copy. I've sorted it out in separate files. He's got about 30 queries about the Second World War, which includes the First World War. I mean, let me just give you a couple of very interesting examples which appeal to me. One of them was on Freemasons, and Hexane said that part of his was the policies attributed to Hitler, but in fact, general Jewish policies. One of those was to get rid of Freemasons. So you'd expect every time the Germans invaded a country, or supposedly invaded a country like France, then they would have published everything they could on Freemasons. But in fact, there is no such stuff. There is no evidence at all that they were interested in Freemasons, despite, I mean, Freemasons are secretive, probably even more so than Jews. They don't have a policy on secretly announcing things, which I presume you were referring to just now. That it's a sort of Talmudic thing that if you tell them, then they've been warned, so you can go ahead. But with Freemasons, that doesn't appear to apply. And
I mean, even Hjalmar Schacht was a known Freemason who was appointed by Hitler to run the central bank and things like that. So I think the positioning of Hitler against Judaism and against Freemasonry was purely superficial, and exactly the same way as their positioning against, for example, homosexuality was purely superficial. It was just an attempt to distance themselves from something that they were actually sort of very much involved in and a part of themselves.
Yeah,
in my opinion. With regard to the China situation now, I'm not advocating that there will be a genuine war between two sides that are sort of genuinely separate, but it will of course be a manufactured war that is controlled on all sides, as I believe the two previous world wars have been. But I'm just making this I'm just sort of coming to this conclusion, at least at the moment, because I've seen a very, very distinct change happen in regards to China in the Western media. Now, for many, many years, the Western media was silent about the Chinese communist state and their sort of totalitarianism, their sort of suppression of the rights of their citizens and everything like this. You hardly heard a word about China for many years. And suddenly, since this coronavirus, there's actually lots of things happening against China. And especially, I think a key person in this change is a guy called Steve Bannon, who, of course, ran Trump's election campaign and was the chief strategist at the White House upon Trump's election. So, you know, he's a major figure, and he used to work for Goldman Sachs. Now, he has involved himself with various people to set up a YouTube channel called Bannon's War Room, and things like this. And any by the way, any links that are mentioned here, I'll make sure I put in the description to the episode for my audience, to so that they can go and look at all these things for themselves. So I think something has changed in regards to China, and whether it will result in a major war sort of obviously remains to be seen. But I think something has changed, and we are seeing an increasing number of very important people taking a stand against China. And also there has been the creation of this new organization, which is called the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China. And for my English audience members, you'll know one of the members of this international alliance. His name's Ian Duncan Smith. And there's many other politicians, including Marco Rubio in the United States, and all sorts. And I'll leave the link to this as well. But this has been set up in the last couple of weeks, I believe, to basically promote the rule of law, or so-called, in China. So basically, to get rid of the Chinese communist system. And Steve Bannon, actually, a few days ago, in sort of a scarcely believable video, he actually announced the creation of a new federal state of China to replace the current People's Republic of China, obviously run by the CCP. So this is really interesting stuff, and if it wasn't coming from Steve Bannon, then it wouldn't be so interesting. But yeah, bearing in mind who he is, I think it's quite interesting. But
okay, anyway, you're happy to accept this idea that both world wars were essentially Jewish fakes?
Yeah, and I would put Jewish in inverted commas, because I think they call themselves Jews, and obviously they're...
Oh, right. Okay, you're a synagogue of Satan.
Yeah, I would... Exactly.
Okay, do you accept... I mean, my view, which I only came to quite recently, is that the Vietnam War was a... They deliberately leaked atrocities in it to keep it as a blind, to keep people's eyes away from China. I think what happened in China may have been very similar to what happened in Russia, as it became the Soviet Union, that Jews massacred tens of millions. I think that may have happened in China. Whether the Chinese have now... I mean, I take... Well, do you agree that China had, for years, centuries, had a Jewish presence there? I mean, how important they were, I don't know, but they may have introduced paper money, for example, into China.
Yeah, I don't know how far exactly it goes back, but there are sort of very, very serious Jewish families operating in China for well before Mao took the reins, in my opinion.
Yes, and of course there was the Jews operating in the Opium Wars.
Yeah, exactly. The Sassoons and the Kaduris and these kind of Jewish families.
That's exactly
mostly,
right.
Mostly Babylonian Jewish families, actually.
Okay.
Iraqi.
In fact, I don't know if you've done this, but presumably there's an application there to India as well, because all the opium was grown in northeast India, wasn't it? Bengal, Bangladesh, that kind of area. Mm-hmm. And this does suggest that the East India Company and all the rest of it were kind of Jewish run, which I hadn't. Oh, yeah, okay, fine. So, I mean,
I completely agree with that, yeah.
Okay. Let me just revert to a couple of these things that Hexane talked about. Another one of his, in addition to Freemasons being sort of written out, was the business about Lebensraum out to the east. And he made a very good case that there are plenty of places which could do with Germans going to them, for example, chunks of Africa and Argentina, South America, that kind of thing. And whereas if he was a racist, a white racist, there would be not much point going to Russia, you know, because it's full of Slavs, it's full of whites already. So that was he made a very good point on that. He also made a good point on Gibraltar, because it was kept in British hands, although presumably Hitler could easily have gone through Spain. Spain was in a desperate situation as regards to because of the Civil War. Could have gone could have taken over taken over Gibraltar and made the Mediterranean a German state, a German sea area, you know. Anyway, so Hexane's very good. I'd recommend him to people listening to me that they should have a look at that, and also have a look at how the Master Race won the Second World War. Now that must be relevant to war with China. I don't take these second-hand people very seriously, really, because anybody can make up a story, and all he'll do is feed stuff from other Jews, from Goldman Sachs or whatever. So the important thing is really, just as with this lockdown thing, is to work out what they're really on about. It wouldn't be a war with China. It would be some Jewish action. It may be that the Chinese are reacting against Jews because they've got nothing particularly in common with them. They are themselves very racist. So it could be that Jews are getting worried that China will slip away from them and reveal stuff. So that could be that. I just don't know.
That's scarcely believable because of the amount of international support for the Belt and Road Initiative and things like this. You know, if they'd have wanted to, sort of if the quote unquote Jewish world order, if you like, wanted to crush China, they would be able to. But actually, China has. Well, it seems is being built up into the next superpower, and that's sort of been happening for decades, sort of thing. You know, after the sort of massive Western investment into China, so I don't think that the Chinese are you know on the verge of breaking away from the sort of internationalists. I think they're just as there was in the Second World War, there could be great benefits to the Synagogue of Satan by creating another war. Of course, as with the first two world wars, the main casualties would be sort of white Europeans and countries that have large white European populations. And but also, I've been watching carefully the sort of the agenda, or the sort of promotion of the agenda of mandatory vaccination.
Yeah.
And I'm of course against mandatory vaccination, as if I'd have to say, but actually I think that it's being used to actually create civil unrest. I don't actually believe that there are serious plans to successfully implement a mass vaccination agenda at the moment, because they are actually busy in the mainstream, even promoting sort of their own anti-vaccination sort of pseudo-opposition, if you like, people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree and people like this. I actually think that if they announce a mandatory vaccination, for example, that could cause massive civil unrest, you know, and, you know, nothing would get people, you know, upset than being convinced that their government wants to kill them, and Bill Gates, of course, is I believe he's another one of these presented boogeymen, a little bit like George Soros and all the Koch brothers and all this, to have us focus our attention on them while other things are happening in the background.
It could be
Yeah, and obviously the creation of anarchy in the West, I think, is a very serious agenda. You know, obviously with the whole Black Lives Matter things, you know, suddenly the coronavirus doesn't matter and everyone should be on the streets smashing buildings up, apparently, because of what I would strongly suggest is a complete staged hoax event.
Are you happy with that? Yeah, the Floyd one. There's a piece by Miles Mathis recently on Floyd, which is worth reading. That's a very good it's the whole thing was just bullshit, wasn't it? It's manufactured, and all the bystanders are kind of fakes and ghosts and what have you.
Completely.
So
I think just creating chaos and rioting and civil unrest is the agenda for the West, I think. Much more so than mandatory vaccinations, in my opinion. But what's your thoughts on it?
It's hard to know, isn't it? I'm in the same position as you are, presumably. I don't really know. But I mean, this lockdown thing, for example, I'm sure is partly calculated to devastate economies, really. I think a lot of high streets, I don't know what they call them in America, malls or main streets or something, are having a hard time because there's so many sales go through online stuff. And there's also under great attack from people like IKEA, who are good value. So I think there may be some excuse to try and, because there's a high street near me, it's called Lord Street in Southport, and that's it's teetering on the brink, I'd imagine, of being sort of invalidated. And there must be huge areas like Fifth Avenue in New York. If you notice, it's all been closed down, boarded up nominally because of these sort of black rioters. But of course, a lot of them are fake. I mean, you can tell, can't you? They're obviously been given permission by the police to go ahead. They're not stopped in any way. And similarly, the media in Britain. I was watching ITV News last night by chance. Just happened to this rubbish on. They're kind of whore, white little girls reading out their prepared texts. And it was continued. It was just about this supposed racism thing. In fact, it was this thing. I don't know if you noticed it. The thing with the slave profiteer. I think it was 17th century. Bloke and his in Bristol, wasn't it? His statue was taken down, but of course they want to distract away from Jews made more money out of slavery than anybody else. The Jews owned the ships and they shipped the people around. And in fact, there was a book by the Nation of Islam on called The Secret Relationship of Blacks and Jews, and that's been taken off Amazon, and they've got a sort of some rubbish in its place. I presume it's rubbish. I haven't bothered. Check. So there's something to do with this, all this stuff. But of course, that is a Jewish issue. Nobody else, everyone else is perfectly happy to believe that Jews ran slaves, and that's true. There's no question about it. But all these demonstrators are paid, presumably by Soros. I mean, you've sort of dismissed Soros as being a sort of figurehead or something. But I don't think that's true. He's got loads of money, loads of paper money, and he hands it out to all these shady organisations.
That is certainly true, but I don't think he's the only one, and I think that he gets so much attention because it's useful, for example, to focus attention on with regard to this, Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. Okay. For his funding of, for example, feminism, open borders, Antifa, all these kind of, far, far left Marxist sort of agitators, rather than the entire Jewish community, and he takes the flack.
Oh, I see.
To take the flack.
He's like Prince Charles or something.
Well,
I see what you mean.
He actually protects because people don't really see Soros as a standard Jewish operative sort of thing. People see him as just this sort of ultra rich billionaire who's just meddling and this kind of thing. But they don't associate him with his tribe so much.
You will be right.
And also, you obviously have people like Soros funding one side of things, funding the far left, but then you also have people like the Koch brothers, who we're supposed to believe are completely diametrically opposed to Soros, but they're funding all the libertarian organizations and all these kind of things, which are in my submission just as damaging, and they create this you know, this yeah. necessary conflict sort of thing. So,
do you think there's a race war being planned? In, you know, blacks versus whites to get rid of both tiresome types.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's seeing how people react so violently to something, you know, even if I'm absolutely convinced that this murder didn't happen, but even if it had happened, it's, you know, that there are 1,000 people murdered every day. It just shows how and that's worldwide, but this just shows how easily how easy it is for the media to stir people up into disorder.
I don't know. I don't really agree. I think they're very careful in what they select and what they show. And you see these demonstrations, they're designed to make them look big. But
True.
But, of course, it's bullshit, isn't it, that most people... Yeah. I think it might have an effect on awakening people, which they don't intend. I mean, you say... A lot of people say that this stuff is... it's unprecedented to have all these controls, but that's not true, really. Mm. I don't think in both the First and Second World Wars there were. I mean, for example, the Second World War there was a blackout, and every single, you know, all the lights were supposed to be off, or blackout curtains, or whatever, and they had these people prowling around as to police the whole thing. So I think the fact is that people still think of the First and Second World Wars as special events. They don't regard them as being rigged up. And in fact, I did a review of Downton Abbey, although I've only seen a few episodes, and shit, and pointing out all this kind of stuff, all the reasons why it's inaccurate, and they've missed out a lot of stuff. I mean, for example, in the First World War, the time of Downton Abbey, there was a huge propaganda thing about, you know, babies having their hands cut off and stuff, and these things lasted for years afterwards. So the stuff I saw, you know, it just didn't have anything of that. You've got all these people under, you know, below stairs, supposedly, you know, all being discussing marriages and stuff. And in fact, they would have been talking about, you know, the Hun cutting off hands and impaling babies on bayonets. And of course, the Jewish writers of the script of this sort of shit don't, you know, they're careful what they put in. So anyway, I don't believe there'd be a war with China, but if there is something like that, then it'll be controlled to get rid of people that they don't want.
I mean,
it may be Americans. It may be against. I mean, the Americans are so fucking stupid, to coin a phrase, that you'd get all these new, you know, these people who've just been 18. They were hadn't fought in anything. They could all be, they could all join up, and I suppose they'd go by. They might have sea or land entries into China, or maybe, you know, air stuff. And, you know, the Jews would be pleased to kill them off. They don't like whites, despite their great limitations. So it could be that. Or there could be a black one. There could be one, something to do with South Africa. South Africa is a sort of plum from the Jewish point of view, because it's got a lot of minerals, but of course they have to be extracted. It's not a very good territory for anything else. It's not good for growing crops. There's not much water. It's a bit like the southwest USA. It's very arid and parched. So it could be something to do with that. Maybe they've got their eyes on South Africa. I don't have any wonderful solutions. Although I would mention Hexane has got his view of the Third World War is that it's a Jewish thing. For their plan to get down to the Euphrates, I think it's something, you know, enlarge Israel, and of course they don't care if loads of other countries are wrecked in the process. In fact, they support that. But as with you, obviously we're not in a position to know these things.
Well, yes, I sort of give the analogy of trying to guess what the end of the sort of how the, you know, the film's going to finish by watching the first 10 minutes sort of thing, and, you know, having not written it. It's I think, you know, the control of the establishment is to such an extent that they can pull off pretty much anything at this stage, because they control all the governments, they control all the banks and all the media and et cetera, et cetera. So we're really just trying to piece together a plausible narrative, basically, aren't we? From the information that we can actually see at the moment.
It's been going on for at least a couple of thousand years, hasn't it? Assuming the conventional dating is correct. I regard the whole thing of Protestantism as being just another Jewish thing, and all this. I mean, you probably don't agree. In fact, it would be a good thing if you don't, because we could discuss it. But I think all the energy put into the King James Bible, you know, books are very expensive, and those are particularly expensive because you've got, you know, hefty bindings and paper and everything. And they spent they had dozens of people working on the translation, and it was forced into circulation, much like the modern media. And of course, the C of E was essentially similar to the BBC now. It's a propaganda outfit. They didn't have broadcasting, so of course they had to have these local people all over the place. If you look at Britain, and I think it had 30,000 parishes, so pretty much everywhere in Britain had a church in sort of walking distance. And it's a very difficult thing to assess Christianity, isn't it? Because in my view, it was a long-term project. It took 1,000 years to get right across Europe. I think Lithuania was the last place to become Christian in about 1200, 830, something like that, some recent time. But what the church did was quite clever. I mean, it had it controlled the land which was not very valuable. Jews basically got the towns, and in my view, the church collaborated with them in secret, more or less. All this business about Sikut Judea, you know, the church would say which you have to put up with these Jews being here, and they also gave the Jews in effect a monopoly. They said nobody else can charge interest, but they, you know, these Jews are so evil they can charge as much interest as they like. I mean, it's in my view, just a pure kind of propaganda thing that money lending was obviously necessary in some circumstances, and they gave the monopoly to Jews in exchange for Jews handing money to the church. I mean, all the cathedrals were built with Jewish money, so it's much more. It's not that different from Freemasons. You know, the Jews controlled the Mediterranean, and they could trade, and of course they made a lot of money out of trade. But in the ports and the port areas, things were controlled by what are now called Freemasons. In fact, if you go to Liverpool, there's some signs in the, you know, road signs, the sort of railway station this way and harbour that way, what have you. But they specifically have the things which are Jewish controlled. They have Quakers. There's a Friends meeting house, and the Quakers were a Jewish thing. So I look on the church as being this kind of big money-making organisation. But I'm not saying it didn't do anything useful. It did have, you know, they did have births, marriages and deaths, and they kept records, that kind of thing, which is what makes it difficult to assess. Some of the things they did would not have been there done otherwise. So anyway, so I've got a different attitude from you to...
I see sort of organisational Christianity, whether it was the Catholic Church or the Protestant churches that were founded are all, you know, have all been flawed and at least to some degree or other designed to obscure the message of Christ and of the sort of the basically obscure the truth, you know, I'm still sort of trying to figure out exactly what I haven't finished my process of learning about this stuff, so I think there's saw lots of problems with the Reformation and things like this. But whether or not it was, you know, sort of led by the people, and maybe and obviously you have, you know, people like Luther and Calvin and things, and I think some of these people are, you know, they can be scrutinized unfavorably, sort of thing. Certainly Calvin, I think, was probably an agent of this same synagogue of Satan, and I'd have to do more research into Luther to understand him better than I do. So it's hard to say, isn't it? I think good things have come out of the Reformation, for example, but maybe also it created that division within Christianity that has been the cause of a lot of conflict as well. So whether or not that was, you know, the positive were sort of they figured that in the whole scheme of things it was better to divide Christianity. Maybe that was a decision that was made, you know, by this same ruling synagogue.
Yes, it could be, couldn't it? Same with Islam, actually. I mean, Islam was split right from the start, wasn't it?
Mm.
And I think that was also Jews boast of having created Islam.
Yeah.
It's got the same sort of mechanism, hasn't it? There's a sort of sacred book, which you're not supposed to criticize in one standard language, that sort of thing.
Well, it turned an area that was very Christian into an area that wasn't, sort of quite quickly. And obviously the Muslims, you know, fairly shortly after Muhammad invaded Spain, of course, and ruled in Spain for, I think, over 700 years. So it's
that's right.
So yeah, as far as Christians were concerned, you know, the creation of Islam was disastrous, you know, and obviously, although Islam accepts that there is a historical figure of Jesus Christ, but they reduced Jesus Christ to that of a prophet, which necessarily also means that they are calling him a liar as well, you know, because that's not what his message is. Okay. So they reduced him to a lying prophet, basically.
Okay. I think I differ from you in your attitude to Jesus. I think it's most likely the whole thing was just a sort of propaganda move. In fact, I put a bit on my articles on Jews. I can't find it now. It's in the top 2020 section. But it's quite a good piece written by a chap in a commenter in Kevin MacDonald's site, and he gave a list, only short, about 8 or 10 quotations, and he reckoned that the whole thing of Christianity, the way it's developed, I don't know how it started, I think the origins of Christianity may have been something completely different. It may have been nationalistic or, you know, anti-imperialist or something, but the way it panned out was a collection of things which were basically anti-white, you know, like turn the other cheek, and if you're sued, you know, give your coat as well. It's sort of stuff which is obviously a Jewish-based thing. And in fact, there's a school of thought that a lot of the Bible is sort of propaganda like that, although they tend not to give enough examples. You know, some of it is anti-Roman. I think is it Revelations or something, can be read as an anti-Roman thing. And the stuff about Daniel can be read as anti some other, I don't know who, some other group. So I think I think this is characteristic of revisionist times, that the people notice things and then they'll sort of project them outwards to other countries and backwards in time. And I'm all in favour of that. I think if you understand this stuff, you know, the better equipped you are to deal with it in future.
I'd just like to mention a guy called Walter Veith, who I was introduced to by a contact of mine on Facebook.
Okay, so how's that spelled?
Veith is his surname. Okay. And he has created a series called Total Onslaught, and it's downloadable on YouTube, and although it's although I do take exception to small aspects of what he says, like he tends to focus on Jesuits rather than quote unquote Jews, although he explains what Jews really means post Christ, sort of thing. And I also think that the reason, you know, it's also kind of helpful to call Christianity a sort of newish religion, sort of thing, a 2,000-year-old religion. Well, Christianity seems like a new religion, but actually the people that accepted Christ as the Savior, they were already observant to God, and they accepted that the prophecy had been fulfilled, and it was in the form of Jesus Christ. So it wasn't a new a new religion as such. They just accepted that this was as prophesied, sort of thing. And it was the quote unquote, as we see today as Jews, who rejected Jesus because they rejected what he said, and they rejected that they were, you know, because Jesus said, if you believe in Christ, then you are of Abraham's seed, which which throws their racial supremacy out the window completely. There's no racial supremacy at all, which I think is why, and I still, I still don't know. This is just my assessment at the moment, but which I think is why in Revelation it says a couple of times, the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews but are not. And I think that means that these people are not Jews because they haven't accepted Christ, whereas people who do accept Christ are Jews. So it's actually the exact opposite, as you would expect from this.
I've heard that suggestion too. There are some quite good people. Hoffman is quite good too, isn't he, on Jews? But he's handicapped, in my view, by being a strict Catholic, like E. Michael Jones. It kind of scrambles up your brains if you take these things very seriously.
I've got issues with E. Michael Jones. As I've mentioned on previous podcasts, he's got a few associations and things that don't really ring true as someone on our side, in my submission.
I agree. I got quite interested just because at least he has a point of view, but don't think it's anyway. That's when I summarised you, I said that you use books which you track down and online stuff. Is that a fair assessment? With Mathis, Miles Mathis is a new type. As far as I know, there's nobody else like him. He looks at online genealogies. There are a lot of genealogy sites, and he never spends any money on them either, actually. He makes a point of, and he's also good on things like photography and facial expressions, because he's a portrait painter. It makes him somewhat more sensitive to these things than most people. And his attitude is, there's a risk, of course, that if you use genealogies, people can remove names. And he's got a bête noire, who's Erica Houghton, I think she's called, who, whenever he mentions something, he looks back again at the websites online and he finds that the stuff's been removed. But his very, I recommend, it's mileswmathis.com is his site, but it's not a very easy one to penetrate because you have to know which bits to click on, and he doesn't do a summary. And if you look at my site again, I just wanted to go on about it, but I've got a search engine. I wrote a search engine which will look at his site, and if you look into things like JFK, you'll get his papers on it arranged in order of what the search engine thinks is important. And I do recommend Mathis very much. If you don't look at him, you're missing out on a huge load of stuff, including, there's a bias towards America, but he's very good on Lenin and Marx and all this kind of stuff, who he traces typically to through their bloodlines. I mean, he did one very recently on Anne Frank, And apparently the Franks were a lot of rich Jews, and they I think it was called Mayer Frank or something, drafted the supposed diary, this kind of thing. And that's what he does. He's very good at that. He's filled a huge kind of ecological niche in exploration, because most of us look at, I don't know, at countries or occupations, or people, language groups, whatever it might be, or like particularly Americans, they think America is a nation. You've got all these people who are obviously not Americans, but they still get propagandas going about the American nation. But Mathis looks at this much more intricate kind of skeleton of family relationships, some of them completely unexpected. I mean, it's very, very worth reading. The Mansons are an example. For example, he reckons that all that stuff is a fake, a psyop. Mm. It's good on Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln. He went to the place where Lincoln was supposed to have been murdered, the theater, and kind of ripped it to pieces. Really, he was not assassinated. He was phased out for good reasons, what seemed good reasons at the time. So I recommend him. I ought to mention him. There's all this other material coming. Like, have you heard of Star Wagons? Does that ring a bell with you? Double R.
No.
Double G. Star Wagons. There.
No, I haven't heard of it.
They're sort of big coaches or buses, whatever, for what's supposed to be stars, but with two R's. I think it's just a coincidence. And they drive these things to whenever they're having a controlled demonstration. All these imitation police or whatever come out with these things. They're usually parked quite near, so you can find them. Fantastic. I was looking at pandemics. There's part of the bullshit about coronavirus is pandemics. And there was actually somebody online comparing death rates with the Black Death, the plague, which was supposed to have killed off half of Europeans or something like that. Just extraordinary. I mean, the complete lack of any sort of awareness or arithmetic comparison is absolutely terrifying, really.
Mm-hmm. I wonder whether that indeed was as reported. It would be the exception rather than the rule, wouldn't it? If the Black Plague was actually reported correctly in our history books, so maybe there was plenty more going on.
There is a theory that it was
behind the scenes there as well.
Yeah, there was a theory that it was a Jewish thing. These people went around with a sort of, I suppose it's a shoulder bag or something, and put this stuff in wells, poisoned all these people.
Mm.
And how much truth there is. You see, it's so difficult. They're not going to get a research grant to research that, are they?
Well, no, exactly. Yeah. So we have to kind of, because there's, I guess preaching to the converted is sort of one thing, but we have to try and get this message to people that, that aren't currently on our wavelength, and I suppose we have to stick to things that are more easily provable with evidence and things like this.
But it is a fact that the medical profession had damaging effects. I mean, they had all these weird things like cupping and bleeding, which are generally accepted now, caused more harm than good. You're more likely to die. And there are other really weird things, like, for example, when vitamin C, when lemons, or they call them limes, but they're actually lemons, when lemon juice was found to cure scurvy, it still wasn't implemented. Did you know that? I don't know how long for, I guess about a century or so, they knew that they could cure it, but they just didn't bother.
There's
something similar with salt. I don't know if you've taken an interest in this, but I didn't know anything about it until recently myself. I assumed that people who talked about having reduced salt, I was assuming they knew what they were talking about. And I was contacted by an Australian who told me actually that he'd contacted other people and got nowhere. And the point he made briefly, very easily understood, was that salt is absolutely necessary to human beings because the hydrochloric acid in your stomach, which is good for, you know, necessary for good digestion and for killing off things you eat by mistake, can only come from salt. Sodium chloride is the only source of it. And not only that, but if your stomach acid is weak, it means you're not, the alkali, the hydroxyls on the other side are weak as well. And an alkaline body is anti-cancer. Cancers will not flourish in alkaline bodies. So salt has those, it has another function, actually, that the sodium ions get sequestrated in the skeleton in bones. And I think that's probably got something to do with hip replacements, because the sockets get worn and kind of rough surfaced. And also another one is that fluoride in water, which of course shouldn't be there, is absorbed more quickly if you're low on salt. So that's another interesting thing, which I haven't found any evidence that that's a Jewish thing in particular, but it probably is. But of course a lot of people are. They just won't look at this kind of stuff. They're so fucking stupid, to coin a phrase. So
as the Chinese would say. Yeah.
Correct.
I'm a big fan of salt. Actually, I have this sort of wet sea salt sort of thing. They dry the salt straight out, and it comes with all the minerals that are in it without it being refined, sort of thing. So it's not this sort of white powder, sort of more slightly damp, but thing. It's obviously
I've never heard of that. Is that plastic packages or something?
Yes, like everything else, unfortunately. But
I'm interested because I've just never heard of that.
You can look up like I can't remember what it's called. I think the one that we get is from Italy, but I think the French make it as well, sort of thing. And it's literally kind of just like dried sea, basically, and it comes with all the hopefully some other useful minerals as well. But I'm actually a big fan of salt. I think a lot of the time when they are, you know, having these sort of propaganda drives for our health, so you must eat less salt, you must eat less this, that and the other or whatever, often you can just read that completely inverted and think, well, actually there must be something good about salt, and there must be something good about sugar if they're, you know, and various other things if they're trying to replace them with something else. And I've noticed that, for example, jams, because I'm a bit of a fan of jam. You'll see that recently they've been increasingly replacing sugar in jam with and a lot of other products with glucose fructose syrup and things like this.
It's
just a gradual deterioration of the quality of our food through the replacement of the substitution of one thing for another. And understanding the motives of the people that run the food industry and the and the government, etc., you can just, it's quite easy, really. You just read it completely inverted and think, I need to take on more salt. You know, I think it makes it so much easier.
Can I go through a few miscellaneous topics? I've got them written down here for no particular reason.
Please do. Yes.
Okay. Well, one of them is geopolitics. This is a piece on my articles on Jews, which I'd forgotten about more or less. Geopolitics. The chap called H.J. Mackinder, Mackinder. He was quite well known in about 1900. This, of course, when Britain in curly in brackets ruled the waves, and they were good on geography, and they had the Royal Geographical Society and so on. And Mackinder had his theory about the world island and so on, but he fell out of favour. I looked at my 1911 Encyclopaedia Britannica, and he's not mentioned in there. So I thought maybe that Mackinder was a sort of Jew aware chap who was looking for piecing together the geography really of Jewish spreading. And I think that's a good. No one's sort of taken that. Whenever I put stuff up, I get readers. I get a lot of readers, but not many of them are very... I don't know if you get any, but there's virtually no feedback. In fact, I may be read, for all I know, most of my readers might just be, you know, spooks and Jews trying to... making sure that certain stuff is not known about, because there must be lots of dark material in Jewish history which they want
to... It's hard to tell, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I offer my email address to, you know, and I put that at the bottom of my podcast to invite people to, you know, to give me some feedback or to, you know, give me some information or correct me on something or, you know, constructive criticism is always welcome as far as I'm concerned. But I don't get that much feedback actually. And all I really get is the number of downloads sort of thing. That's all as far as the podcast goes, that's all I've really got to go on. And of course, like, you know, verbal feedback from people every now and again, but that's kind of few and far between really.
Yeah.
Which is kind of why I still am attracted to the Facebook platform really, because you do get direct feedback sort of thing when you post something. And actually, yeah, because I am posting things regularly on Facebook again, I invite, you know, my audience to add me on Facebook and follow me there as well, because I'm posting stuff normally several times a day, and I'm, you know, and you just get, you know, a little bit more regular content than my podcasts.
Okay.
And I'll leave a link to my address sort of thing when
make sure you don't get banned.
I do get banned. I've already had I spent about half of last year banned on Facebook, about 6 months of the year, but then this year for some reason not so much, which is kind of peculiar, but it's just
I've stopped using it because I got banned, which is, it's just irritating anyway. Never mind. Let's, what's your take on applauding for the NHS? What's going on there?
Oh dear. just this sort of ritual, you know, this ritualization of it's just sick, really sickening. I mean, actually, mentioning that, it just reminds me of this Greg Hallett guy. And I don't know if you've been following what's been happening regarding him recently, but he's announced himself as basically the new King of England and the new the owner of everything, the member of the Christ bloodline, apparently, who now owns everything, and he insists that when people are actually clapping for the NHS, they're actually clapping for the new Hallett sovereign.
Oh, I see.
I'd invite me and my friend had a great laugh watching his interview with Jim Fetzer, and absolutely barking mad stuff, really. But who knows? Like, the mad things do actually happen, and who knows, we may see Greg Hallett crowned as king of the world. But if that is the case, then we shouldn't get too excited that he'll be a great ambassador for us, in my opinion.
Okay.
But the whole NHS worship thing, you know, it's basically a worshipping of the state, a worshipping of medical poisons, it's always been the sort of the far left really that have been the fiercest advocates of the NHS.
Okay, when you say the far left, I mean, you don't mean that in the... I mean, I presume you accept that socialism was originally a serious movement, you know, for to get rid of poverty and stuff, and it was taken over by Jews, and so the people who call themselves left now are just phonies. Isn't that so? I mean, do you agree?
I mean, there's obviously... I'm talking about contemporary socialist sort of thing, that, you know, post the creation of the NHS sort of thing. I mean, I guess there's been social rights, you know, I'm you know, organizations dating, you know, back a long way. And I think the Quakers are very involved in that as well. And a lot of them are about destroying, actually destroying rights, you know, and you know, and other things. But, but I mean, yeah, it's just, there's nothing to worship about with the NHS. It's, you know, it's a,
Job, aren't they? Or not doing their job.
Well, these, yeah, I've got the individuals that work for the NHS. I think a lot of them are great, are probably very nice people. But unfortunately, the organisation as a whole is just part of the pharmaceutical cabal, and it's part of the state. And so they're subject to all the establishment agendas. And so there's, you know, and actually, in a time like this, you know, these, unfortunately, the people that are, you know, fierce advocates of the NHS are more our enemies than our friends, unfortunately, because they'll believe these so-called experts that get wheeled out in front of us and then sort of bully everyone else to comply with them, you know, like to lock ourselves in our homes and all this kind of stuff. So they don't see the corruption of the entire system, and they don't understand why these experts, they may be intelligent, but they're not honourable.
Well, there's a distinction between administrators and medical experts, isn't there? And that's the real real key to it. A lot of these administrators don't know anything about medicine. They're just kind of
But quite a lot of the doctors, I think, don't know anything about medicine either.
Well, they're not researchers. Yes, that's true.
No, they've just gone through the same controlled medical schools and learnt the same stuff that's been and learnt the phony science, you know, very, very well.
Some of it's definitely phony. I've been,
like the virus theory. I think the viruses are supposed to be alive, but they're, you know, but when it suits them, they say that viruses are dead, and they can't seem to make their minds up. And you know, and I think there's what's there's.
Yeah, you're still there.
Something, an Irish name. But if you go to Shots of Truth, there's lots of information about the false virus theory. And I also look at my podcast with Northern Trace as well, because we go into quite a lot of detail about that. But it's just an example of a precedent being set with a certain theory being adopted, and then everything that comes afterwards has to fit in with that accepted theory.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So, you know, it's all just corruption.
You apply that to AIDS too, do you?
Well, I'm
1984 that started, I think.
Right. Yeah, I
wondered, because that's a very similar thing, but of course it's a couple of generations ago, really. So it's the whole technique of it, the whole method that it was promoted, has been forgotten. Actually, that reminds me, I've got in touch with some AIDS kind of activists. One of them was called Joan Shenton. I thought she was very good, but I think now that she may have been controlled opposition. She helped run a magazine called Continuum from the Brunswick Centre in London, near Russell Square Tube, and I think they got nowhere. And I wondered if she was interested. I emailed her to see if she was interested in this coronavirus thing, but she wasn't. So I think she's part of the Jewish controlled opposition, which is sad.
Yeah.
By the way, what did you make of Gates in India? He's supposed to have vaccinated tens of thousands of Indians who got ill or died or something as a result.
Yeah, the polio vaccine. Yeah, I don't know where the figures have come from, but you know, I've got little reason to suspect that's not true. That lots of people were injured with his vaccines. I mean, there are lots of sort of disabled people in India. I have visited India in the recent past, sort of a few years ago, a couple of times, and there are lots of people with physical deformities and things there. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if it was down to vaccination. And we know that Bill Gates has been heavily involved in vaccination there.
Yeah.
You know, I think their main antagonism is towards us, but isn't exclusively towards us.
I think a lot of these people have been booted out from various countries. There was, in the AIDS so-called epidemic, there were a lot of countries in, I think it's Southeast Asia was one of them, kicked them out. I've heard of a similar case with coronavirus. Well, there's some chap in Africa who submitted samples from a melon or something, or a, whatever it was, some goat, I think, and he got back a confirmation that it was a genuine coronavirus thing. And I think he's booted them out. So right. You do get this kind of stuff. Can I just ask you here, to summarise your view on Ireland, as I gathered reading through it, Jews were, well, dominated or ran parts of Ireland, not all of it, for hundreds of years. And of course, the general view is that Ireland was persecuted by the English, and you know, generally downtrodden. What is your summary of Ireland?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've as my audience will know, that I've done a lot of research into Ireland. I produced a podcast episode on Ireland. So if anyone wants to sort of look specifically at that, then sort of the information's in there. But I mean, to summarise, I believe that it was a synagogue of Satan operation to split the United Kingdom from Ireland, and that the sort of liberation, quote unquote liberation movement of Ireland was really always controlled by this same group, and although a lot of really Irish people were involved in the struggle, sort of thing. It's the same as today, you know, these political movements and social movements and things. They're run by this certain group, and then a lot of the goy, you know, buy into it and become a part of it.
Get bought
sort of
into
thing.
It.
I think it's a tragedy. I don't see why Britain and Ireland should be two separate countries, sort of thing. You know, we're basically all brothers, and it was just a divisive thing. And I think the British government, in their behaviour towards Irish people, helped the revolution ultimately occur, because you know, if you have the establishment that have already decided that they want to create this partition, between Britain and Ireland, then you have to create the independence movement to fight for that cause. But that is then helped if there then is actually atrocities being committed or nastiness being committed to the Irish, to further strengthen that movement and make it seem legitimate. So you've got the two sides working together, sort of thing, and it's all about creating sort of to create a situation where brother kills brother, isn't it? It's a little bit like the First and Second World Wars, in my opinion. To have Christians killing Christians.
It is a bit odd that the Jewish funding of both sides passes so unnoticed, isn't it?
No, it's incredible, and you know, I think the Zionist connection to the Irish struggle as well, which you know, on the surface seems so kind of inexplicable, but when you understand that this same group has been running things for a very long time, it's perfectly understandable. But yeah, there's a lot more info in my podcast, and I also talked to Timothy Kelly and to Andrew Carrington Hitchcock about that as well. So you, there's probably archives of my talks with them.
I mean, Britain was unified in the 1600s, wasn't it? That was when the Union Jack, Union Flag, was invented. But what about before that? Or is that another?
Well, I'm not. I don't feel qualified to.
Fair enough. I just got the impression that you were going back further than that.
Yeah, I mean, I have in certain regards, but I lack the confidence to in my understanding to say anything very.
Okay. Do you have any views on the idea that the Mediterranean was such a crucial, important thing? Because it's, if you look at on a map, globe of the world, you can see the Mediterranean is far and away the biggest inland sea. I mean, it's far bigger than, for example, the Great Lakes in America. And it's not only that, but these big bodies of water like the Black Sea and the Caspian are kind of in the same sort of area. And I think but it's much more difficult to understand the geography east of the Mediterranean, because you've got there's a mountain range, the Caucasus, and there's also various, rivers and so on. But they're not so kind of elegant and neat as the Mediterranean. I think that's one of the reasons why there's so many sort of oddities there, with the sort of thing that excites Kevin MacDonald. He doesn't seem to look at geography, but in Europe you've got all these islands and also things like mountain ranges, like the Alps, the Alps and the Pyrenees and so on, and just ice and water, ice going up north there, and so these areas have boundaries which are fairly natural, but out east you've got this great big trackless areas of it's prairie land, steppes, they call them, don't they?
Yeah.
Any views on that, or is it just?
Well, no. I mean, I think sort of geography is an area that I could well do with learning more about as well. And ultimately, the original centres of power were areas of commerce and through the sea obviously was a very important way of trade and of transporting goods around and things like this. So that's an area that I
I'm not sure about places like Persia and Babylon. They're surprisingly east in my view, but that's I just don't know.
Right. Well, Ray, I think I need to go now, but it's been lovely to talk to you, and
I
think we've covered a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, we must do it again sometime. Anyway.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. we'll let's leave it at that, and do another one sometime.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks.
And if there's any links you want to be included in my. Where I posted on my podcasts page, just send them over, and we'll. That's what I try to do, to provide as many links for my audience as possible, just so they are not taking my word for it, but coming to these, coming to their own conclusions, and hopefully the same conclusions as me.
I'm happy if you just put big-lies.org, because my front page, unlike everybody else's front page. My front page has links to all these things. Anyway, terrific, thanks. Good.
That's great. All right, thanks a lot, Ray.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.